Hey, and welcome to another episode of Podcraft. This is a show all about podcasting, from launching your show to monetization and everything in between. I'm Colin Gray, as always, joined by Matthew McLean. How are you doing, Matthew?
Good morning. Very well, thank you. And good. Yourself?
Very well, very well. Suffering from a bit of lack of vitamin D since we've blocked up the window here.
Yeah.
The studio has a window right in front of us, which used to get some really nice light through, but we've blocked it up in an attempt to make our lighting for videos better, but it just means you're lit up in a kind of green tinge instead, because since the curtain's green.
It's a bit dingy outside today anyway.
Yes, indeed. It's sleety, cold and wet. A good day for recording a podcast. So this episode is all about highly produced podcasting. We're continuing our season on highly produced podcasting, which basically just means, if you're only joining us here, just means putting a bit more effort into your show, doesn't it? A bit more polish, a bit more work, a bit more production, as in more music, more cuts, more interviews, more voices, a lot more variety. The like that you've seen on the classics everyone always mentions, which are...
Yeah, NPR, BBC. NPR style, BBC style. Yes. They're the only people that could make high quality audio programmes.
Indeed, indeed. This American Life, Serial, all them kind of things. So yeah, anyway, we're going through that this season. And this season, we're just about finished, but this one, we want to go through outsourcing. So we've got two episodes to go, don't we? Well, actually three. We're going to do two full ones and then a kind of bonus content one. This one's all about outsourcing. So how you figure out whether you get other people in to help you with your highly produced podcasting, whether you start to build your own team around it, whether you take on all roles yourself, or whether, you know, whether it's just you can't afford to, so you can't do it because actually there's so many roles in it. So we're going to go through all of those roles, aren't we? And the different ways that you might be able to outsource, from, you know, overseas outsourcing to building a team locally. And in the final episode, we're going to go through all the tools, aren't we? All the tools we use to produce a highly produced podcast. So that'll finish up the season. But this time around, we are sponsored by our very own Podcast Host Academy.
Great sponsor. How much are we paying ourselves?
We are paying ourselves a grand total of £0 and zero pennies. But that doesn't reflect the quality of said sponsor, I would say, much.
Can I get an affiliate link?
No, you cannot.
Coupon code Matthew.
No, you cannot. The Academy is our membership site where we can coach anyone to do highly produced podcasting or basic podcasting. If you want to start a show, if you're procrastinating, you need some help with getting started, from coaching to courses to resources, all that stuff, then come and check out the Academy at thepodcasthost.com/academy. And you'll see all the details there. All right. So highly produced podcasting, outsourcing, right? What, first of all, why might you want to outsource your highly produced podcasting, Matthew?
The big one is, like, you might not have the required skills. You might not feel you have, like, all of them, all of the required skills, because there are many, obviously. The other one is time. Like, it's a huge, huge time commitment. So if you're lacking in time, but have a bit of budget behind you, it's a really good option as well.
Yeah.
And the third reason that I could really think is that you just want a really exceptional level of production. So you might be pretty competent in creating content, creating and producing audio, but you just really want it to be, like, brilliant.
You want
professionals to do it.
So. The first and the third there go together, don't they? Like, if you're, I suppose there's various levels, isn't there? Like, if you're a total beginner and you're not very good at audio production in general, you can take somebody on, you can outsource it, get some help. Even if it's like, you know, you want to learn, you take somebody on that actually is not just going to do it for you, but they're going to coach you through the process of it. Like, we've done that with a couple of clients, haven't we? We've ended up producing their show for them, but taking a lot more time to actually show them, this is how we did this, this is how we did that, talking them through it all.
Yeah.
It works quite well, I think.
Aye, they get the first few episodes produced, but they then really have the know-how to go on and do the rest themselves.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And later episodes, they take a bigger role and take on more of the jobs that we'll come onto, because we're going to talk about the jobs in highly produced podcasting, aren't we? So yeah, you can start to take on more and more of them. But yeah, even your latter one there, you want that exceptional level of production. Even once you're really good, you can hire somebody who is, you know, world-class to give it that sort of final polish, eh? And in fact, I mean, that's the one, if I was taking on somebody like that, I would definitely want to learn from them. It's not the kind of person you just want to throw money at, is it? You want to figure out exactly what makes them world-class.
On the other side of that too, if you are like really world-class or really exceptional at something, then there's a good argument for the fact that you don't need to be doing the more basic jobs.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
For example, like cutting up the audio, looking at the script and just chopping bits up.
Yeah, that
could be outsourced to someone who is going to charge not too much because it's quite basic work and it frees you up to do what you're better at doing.
Yeah, totally. So you do the sort of strategy, the planning, the narration, all of the kind of the high level knowledge work stuff around it, whereas you let them do the basic cutting up and the processing and stuff like that.
Yeah, like Casey Whelan, the writer and producer of the audio drama series We're Alive.
Yep.
When he started, he did everything himself, but nowadays he has a team of editors that will do the voice cuts and things like that. So he ends up with the final, well, the almost final session that he'll go in and just like really add a final layer of polish to.
But all the
heavy lifting's already been done
because
he basically doesn't need to do that.
Yeah.
He's got a system that, you know, people could do that for him.
Yeah,
so
We've kind of been doing that. Like even though you're great at producing audio, but non-fiction stuff, there's a show that I'm working on just now, The Converge Challenge, whereby I'm doing the narration, then you're doing that kind of heavy lifting part, and then I'm doing the polish on it. But that's just because I know that topic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So even when somebody does know it well, they can just get in there and just flash through the sort of procedural bits. So you can get help with things from people with those skills, even if it's not necessarily the, you know, what you would ideally put them in. But yeah, it's kind of, yeah, it's definitely, there's all sorts of reasons why you might want to outsource anyway, or just get some help with it. I mean, we say outsource, it has a kind of connotation, doesn't it, that you're always going to put it across to, you know, India or the Philippines or something like that. And basically the principle is that you're wanting to get it really cheap, but that's not true. I mean, it's like we're saying here, it might be that actually you want to get much more high skills in there and learn from them too. So yeah, there's a whole range of different types of outsourcing. So let's look at the team then. What roles are there in this team? Like, is it kind of like thinking of yourself as, in the early days, it's you are the team, isn't it? Like you said there, Casey did it all in the early days. You did it all in the early days on your stuff. Same with me. So we've all been that one person team in the past. So what were all the roles you had in the early days when you were producing your audio dramas?
Yeah, well, just before I get to that, it reminds me of that you lent me a book back in the day. It was about running business.
And the E-Myth.
The E-Myth, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one for
and
that.
And it was the same premise. It was even if you were the sort of sole trader, the one-man band business, it was thinking of yourself as like, well, you know, if this was a major company, if it was being franchised, what would roles be?
Yeah.
And over time, the idea is that you do, you know, you always have those roles and eventually people take those roles.
Yeah,
but in the early days, you do them all.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think
But you're right. Sorry to interrupt, that it's worthwhile knowing those roles. Even if you're not planning to outsource them anytime soon, it's worthwhile knowing all of the different roles that you do have, that you do yourself, because it means that you can allocate your time between them. You can plan between them. You know, it helps you figure out exactly what you need to do day to day, knowing, you know, the different jobs that you've got.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think of the roles as being in a highly produced podcast then?
I think one of the main ones, well, they're all really main ones, if you break it down, but creative director, the person who comes up with the ideas, has an ear for good content, an eye for identifying good content, is able to shape the narrative and the storylines and always remains mindful of the big picture. So although there's like loads of tiny wee jobs to be doing, always keeping in mind, like, where is this going? What is it achieving? Is this going in the direction? Is this setting out to achieve what I want to achieve with it?
Yeah. There's a few different names for this, isn't it? Like, I think in TV, am I right in thinking a producer? That's what a producer does in TV and films and stuff like that. Like it's kind of, the top level. It's kind of the manager almost that keeps yeah, the vision of the project in mind. Yeah. And then there was, you know, the HotPod newsletter that Nick Qua runs.
Mm-hmm.
He had, there was a feature in there recently. There was somebody, I can't remember the person that did it, but somebody put together a spreadsheet of all of the editors that they knew. And I was, I think of an editor being somebody who does go in there and just does the kind of technical stuff. Like they literally just chop up, like we're talking about you could outsource somebody that's just going to chop it up based on a script. But his idea, or this person's idea of an editor, was people who were basically what you're talking about there, like with the ideas. They've got ideas for sort of the top level of it. It's more actually, it was more about that second thing you said, the identifying good content. So being able to see the narrative in a kind of mess of stuff.
Yeah. Interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So if they... You put together a 20-minute draft of something and you know there's some good stuff in there, but you've lost context because like you're so involved in it. An editor comes in and they listen to it and they say, right, this bit here, 2 minutes 30 to 4 minutes 40, that is the gold. We need to expand that out over 10 minutes. We can cut this bit down because it's just not that interesting. They can sort of see the gold bits against the not so good bits.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's interesting that I hadn't thought of an editor. Apparently that's a term for somebody like this as well.
Yeah.
So that was a spread. It was interesting. It was a spreadsheet of like 30, 40 people that fit that that description, all the different shows that they worked on. So hey, there's a way to outsource. There's a bunch of people there. I should link to that in the show notes.
I think in this day and age as well, in sort of that type of media job, that although like specialising is good, also so has been really versatile. So yeah, it's sometimes not enough to say like, you know, I am an audio producer,
yeah,
because you've got to be a bit more than that.
Yeah,
even if it's not your main speciality, you've got to be a bit of a jack of all trades with stuff like this, especially if you're freelance, because it's, you know, most people that their door isn't being kicked down for work and they've kind of got to be flexible.
Yeah, indeed. Aye. So is that another role then, the audio producer? Is that a different thing?
Yeah, so your audio producer is also your recordist, if you like. So, you know, you could be an absolute wizard at editing audio, but if you're being handed a ton of really badly recorded source material, with the best will in the world, you're not going to be able to make it brilliant. You're not going to be able to polish it. You're only going to be repairing stuff. So I think your audio producer has to go out and know, you know, be very mindful of like, is this audio good? Is it clear? Is it free from distortion? Mm. Because when you go back and sit down and load it into the DAW, it's going to make your life easier. Yeah. It's going to be quicker.
Yeah.
And then we move on to, you know, sitting down to.
Yeah. So I was going to say that the audio producer then, that is a person that, do you think of the people that know, that go out and grab the material as the same people that have to come back and then edit it as well?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't necessarily have to be, but I think, you know, trying to be sensible about this and keep the team, even if it is a team, keep it kind of small.
Yeah. But is that different? That's different. Is that different buckets of knowledge? So a recordist, which what you called it there, they have to know the kit, don't they? Inside out. Like you have to know the mics. You have to know the recorders. You need to know your environments, all that kind of stuff. Whereas a producer, what I always thought of as a producer would be somebody that is in their DAW. They know Adobe Audition or, you know, Pro Tools or whatever inside out.
I guess like I've never really come across anyone who is good at one and doesn't know anything about the other.
Yeah.
It's just kind of there's such an overlap there.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I'm just kind of curious because there's definitely there's a lot in both, isn't there? There's a lot to know in both sides of things.
Yeah. The hardware, the software.
Yeah.
Over time it begins to merge together, but start it's one of those things that's there's so much to learn.
Yeah.
There absolutely always is, even when you've been doing it for years.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so you know, somebody who can process, cut, mix all the audio on the computer and basically create your polished finished product.
Cool. Okay, so they've got the that's the material grabbed, that's, you know, content captured at a really high quality, making sure you're getting it in there and it's all chopped up and stuff. But what about the content itself, like actually gathering the content?
You could know tons about audio, about recording audio, but does that necessarily mean you're the one to go and do the interviews, as in ask the questions? So a content gatherer, an interviewer, traveling to meet and interview guests, somebody who knows how to interview and what content to seek out of these conversations.
Yeah.
You've got to have good people skills, because you want the person you're speaking to be completely at ease. You want them to be comfortable. You know, you can't just go and be really, if you're basically quite uncomfortable, you're not going to get good content out of the people you're speaking to.
Yeah.
And these interviews might not always be in person as well. So it could be online via things like Skype.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the bit that people always underestimate for me. Like, you know, it's why the vast majority of people end up doing interview shows. Or maybe it's changed a little bit these days, but it was certainly a couple of years ago, because they think of it as an easy way to create good content, don't they?
Yeah.
All you need to do is find some clever people, some interesting people, and I'll talk to them and I don't have to do any preparation. But it's... it's absolute nonsense, isn't it? Because like being a good interviewer is hard to find. It's a hard skill to learn, and it's very, very noticeable when you see it, isn't it? Like I've been doing it more recently, actually watching good talk shows, not like cheesy crap talk shows like Jeremy Kyle or whatever, but like good ones where people are properly delving into like people's lives and stuff. And it's when you're looking for it, there's an art, there's a craft there about how to draw people out of themselves. So yeah, you're right. Knowing it's probably quite unlikely in kind of professional media production that your interviewer will know the kit inside out or the editing inside out. That's a different skill, isn't it? It's a different person that's doing that presenting. But then is there a different role for a presenter as well? Is that a different thing? Like, would you have your presenters on TV, for example, going off and doing the information gathering, or is that a different thing?
Yeah, I mean, a presenter isn't necessarily going to be a great interviewer, because you could almost compare it to being like a voiceover. So because you're a voiceover doesn't mean you know anything about interviewing.
You can perform, but you can't actually talk to people.
So you might have a great voice and be really good at presenting a script, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Reading it without sound, making it sound like you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe you are a good interviewer, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be.
So. Yeah. So you've worked with a lot of presenters sending off requests for voiceovers and all that kind of thing. Are they a hard person to find, or is that loads of people out there trying to get into presenting? You kind of imagine that.
There's lots of people out there doing voice acting and voiceovers. I've always kept my pool of people that I use very small, because it's... you want to know that folk are reliable. So you find good people and you kind of stick with them.
Yeah. And you know they've got a good kit and a good environment to record in as well.
Exactly. If you're doing this remotely, again, we could have Morgan Freeman doing some voice work for us. But if he's recording in a bathroom with a blue snowball, then we probably wouldn't want him.
Yeah.
So it's if it's remote, it all comes down to that too. Do they know anything about recording audio?
Aye, absolutely.
Do they have good kit?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, last one, researcher. This is the person that actually finds the information for you, isn't it? Or do they... See, this is something that we thought about for a new show recently. Well, for Hostile Wars partly, but actually I was thinking about other projects and whether we could employ somebody to basically put together the concept for a show. So they actually wouldn't have anything to do with recording, editing, presenting, interviewing or anything like that, but it's more somebody who has a skill in putting together a concept and finding all the background information and then passing over a brief to maybe that creative director or the producer.
Yeah, I think we're a researcher as well. It's similar to the creative director in that they've got to have a... They've got to be able to identify like what's relevant and what's not,
because
there's no point in sending over like tons of stuff, because then you're just giving the whoever's requested it like too much work.
Yeah, the goal is not to research every possible thing. It's to narrow things down to the most interesting, the most relevant, the most engaging elements. Yeah.
You've got to be somebody who isn't too easily distracted, because... Yeah. When you're on Google, when you're on Wikipedia, you know how easy it is to go down rabbit holes.
Yeah,
suddenly you're looking at something that's nothing to do with what you're researching. So
I mean, the researcher role, if you're the person who's the whole team, that's basically your I suppose this kind of brings out why you need to think about all these roles, because this is another part that interviewers often miss out. They miss out the fact that you need to become good at interviewing, and they miss out the fact that you need to actually put a bit of effort into finding out something about this person. Not just about the backstories either, or about the kind of the questions you should ask them, but even things like knowing their social media handles and their website and what product they've got out just now, so that you can basically help these people make the most of their experience on your show, which is what helps them then help you help promote you or get other people onto interview on your show as well. So yeah, there's a lot of elements to the research, and I think that a lot of people, the thing that always winds me up, you know how people sometimes say, I don't research for my interviews because I like to go in fresh. I like to go in with the same mindset as my listener.
Yeah,
so I'll ask the same questions.
Yeah. That's a total cop-out.
It's just laziness. It's nonsense, because it just means you miss loads of opportunities. The very, very, very best people can get away with that, but not many, I think.
I hate the idea that not having knowledge is good.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
Ignorance is
the society
is
we live in nowadays, but yeah, I prefer not to know this.
Yes.
Another thing about being a researcher is being able to present your information clearly so that everyone can interpret it. You don't want to be...
Yeah. Yeah, so if you're part of a larger team...
I mean, you want the end product to be accessible to anyone, so... In theory, so should the research.
Yeah.
And one that I've not added on there that I should have was writer as well, because somebody's
of course,
got to write the script.
Which
absolutely. Is quite important. And the thing about writing a script as well is, I think it's important to liaise with your presenter they're different people.
Yeah.
Because you know, how you write and how they talk might be different. So
that's another really unique skill, isn't it? Writing for speech.
Yeah.
And especially writing for somebody else's speech, which is difficult. Yeah. Okay. So, what are we talking about here? You've got, how many roles did we have there? Was that like 1, 2, 3, 4? So 5 plus writer. So 6 in total, at least. And to be honest, there's probably other sort of subtleties of roles in there too that can be even more. Is it about figuring out your time, figuring out your confidence in each area? Not just that, but like how much you enjoy each area as well. I'm talking about like how to find people to take on, whether you need to outsource any of it or how you start to outsource it. What would you think about in terms of where to start?
I'd think about, like, are there any of these jobs that I hate? And I hate them that much that this, like, is going to spoil the project.
Yeah.
So if you can get past that and you can get somebody to do this job, then great.
Yeah, and even if there's not parts you hate, there'll be parts you like less, parts you're less confident in. I don't know, is there any kind of Superman out there that can do it all and likes it all? Like, what do you decide then? Is that, what do you think is the easiest thing to find somebody around? Maybe that's a good place to start if you've not sickened yourself of anything yet. Is it audio editor, do you think? Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, I think as well, even if you are the superhuman jack of all trades, you still don't, you know, it's still going to take you a long time to do it all.
Even if
you are great at it. In fact, often with things like audio production, the better you get, the longer it takes you to do stuff. It's one of the things where you become more of a perfectionist.
Yes.
So
don't
think, you know, I'll get better at this, I'll get quicker. It's often the opposite. You go the other way. So, you know, even if you love it all and are good at it all, do you want to get this done?
Yeah, I feel like you could capture back the most time by first finding somebody who can do decent audio engineering. You know, somebody who's good with their DAW. They can take an audio, they can make it sound great, they can put together those cuts and mixes and stuff for you. So maybe that's a good place to start. And then I feel like almost the next one would be the content gatherer, because if you can afford the funds or the share of the project or whatever, we'll kind of come on to how you incentivize these people later, won't we? But if you can afford whatever it will take to get somebody involved that can get out there and can interview people and can get that content, because, you know, like often with highly produced podcasts, and you want to be in person because that's what gets you the highest quality content. If you're putting that much effort in, you want the highest quality source material, which means being in person, which means travel, which means, you know, being away from home, all that kind of stuff. So if you can afford to get somebody who's decent at that to do a lot of that, then you might be able to get a lot further. You can do a lot more of the planning, the production, the narration, all that kind of stuff. So is that a good second stage maybe?
Yeah, I would say, like, from my own personal point of view, I'd be looking to ship out the presenter's role.
Yeah, because you hate presenting.
Yeah, I don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy other things.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of really, really good people out there who want to do that. You know, they love that stuff. They're good at it. So, and getting a good presenter, it's taking your show to that next level.
It makes a big difference, doesn't it? When you've got somebody that just, they can just do that. Like, they just sound great on the mic. They can engage the listener so well. They can just come across really well. Yeah, that's a big level of polish.
Because, again, you know, you think you're maybe saving money by doing it yourself. And if you're not the best presenter, you're coming out of your sound booth with, like, an hour-long WAV file full of mistakes. If you're the editor too, you've got to sit down and chop that up. You could get a real presenter and you're just going to get these, like, one-take efforts and most of them are fine. And it's just, like, it's so much easier and it's so much less frustrating.
Yeah, translate all the way through. Okay, right. So let's go on to how do you build this team? How do you find the people to actually fill these roles? Actually, before we jump into that, let's do our quick... So I mentioned this episode sponsored by the Podcast Host Academy. The Academy, to tell them a bit about it. How can it help people highly produce podcasts, Matthew?
Yeah, well, through the community forum the live sessions, and we've got an audio production course, Edit and Audacity, which is it's a good enough DAW to do your projects in. So there's all sorts of ways you can kind of get help.
Yeah, there's plenty of people have produced a good, highly produced podcast in good old Audacity, which is a free tool. And yeah, we've got a full course in there. What, 20, 30 lessons you've put together to take people up to expert level on Audacity. We love this sort of type of podcasting. It's time consuming. It's not something we can do as often as we'd like, but we do it for clients. We do it for Hostile Worlds. You still do it for all your audio drama. So actually, to be fair, we do it as often as we like.
Yeah.
Probably more often than we like. So if you're thinking about putting together a really highly produced show like this, then we're happy to help you on the live coaching sessions we do. Every 2 weeks, you can get in there for an hour, chat to me and Matthew and ask all the questions you need. In the forum too, we've got a few people in there, don't we? We should mention Connor. Connor does a really highly produced podcast, doesn't he? Which is called Words to That Effect. So Connor produces this. He's really highly produced, a really polished show. It's absolutely brilliant. We've even got members of the community that do a lot of this stuff too that are happy to help. The Academy, thepodcasthost.com/academy. And of course, it's for beginner podcasters right up to that highly produced element. So yeah, courses, resources, live coaching, and the community, all to help you get your skills upgraded, get your great show out there.
Brand new course in there too.
Indeed, yeah, the growth course we should talk about. Yeah, 30 days of growth. So a little task every single day for 30 days to grow your show, to grow your audience, isn't it? Something like 5, 10, 15 minutes for each task. So something you can work through and guarantee. Well, no, can't guarantee. But we almost guarantee. We can hedge our bets and say you will probably have grown your audience.
You're not doing yourself any harm.
Exactly, yeah. It won't make your case worse. Okay, right. So how do we build this team? Let's start with the obvious, like somebody like us. So we produce stuff for clients, don't we? So you can outsource the entire process to a company, an agency, a team that does this already. That's one option, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, reaching out to just one company that have a team, you know, a lot of great freelancers out there, but of course they're one-man bands. Something goes wrong, if something happens to them, or if they, you know, just quit, your project could kind of fall down.
Yeah.
But if you reach out to a company like ourselves, or there are other production companies out there, and just speak to them and ask for a price, give them as much details as you possibly can about what you want to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, they'll get back to you, or we'll get back to you with maybe some follow-up questions, get on Skype, talk about it a bit, and just put a quote together. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely. Yeah.
These options are more expensive by their nature, but,
way
you know,
more,
they, yeah. they, they simplify the process as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not necessarily what we'd, I mean, we kind of, we try and teach people how to do it themselves on here, don't we? But we're always there to help if we need it, if people need it. But this is definitely something that's possible to learn yourself. But obviously, that solution is there if you want it. Do we want to go into cost, give a ballpark? Could probably do it based on some projects we've done in the past, eh?
Yeah.
Like, there's one we're working on right now, which is sort of four episodes, really highly produced. It included going out and interviewing four people, pretty in-depth, planning out a set of questions for those people, planning out the entire show, the entire narrative over four episodes, then going back, scripting, narrating, putting together that show, putting in the music, sourcing music, all that kind of stuff. So basically everything we've talked about over this series, creating four episodes for this company. And that was in the region of, I can't remember the exact quote for that one now, actually, but it was somewhere in the region of £3,000 to £4,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's how much it costs.
Yeah.
£1,000 an episode, basically, in the region of that. But I mean, that's taken us, I don't know, at least a couple of days. No, I think I budgeted about 3 days per episode for us.
Yeah.
So like half a day to go and get the interviews, half a day for scripting and narration, then a good day for all the editing around production and sort of getting all the audio beds and putting it all together. And then, you know, the next set of editing where you go back and you do some more narration and all that kind of stuff. Then, you know, there's a lot involved there. So there was at least 3 days per episode allocated to that. But yeah, I hope that gives people an idea. That's kind of the region you're talking about. Certainly with us, that's what we can charge for that type of production. And there'll be other agencies and above and below that, but that's the ballpark.
Generally, for a handful of these episodes, you're talking four figures, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, okay, presuming you don't want to outsource it, either you want to do it yourself, you want to learn how to do it yourself, or you don't have the budget to pay somebody that much money, what's the next option?
So you want to manually build a team around you, and this could be, you know, friends, acquaintances, freelancers, just going out and, you know, it's going to be cheaper, but it could take a bit longer to set it up. And it's risky as well, because you get one weak link in there and, you know, that can break the chain. But, you know, it can be done. You know, it depends. You could put a brilliant team together.
I mean, you get a great interview content, great research, great planning, and then suddenly a badly set up recorder means that the content's all crap.
Yeah.
So, I mean, finding these people, I suppose the first stop is just actually, you know, a lot of teams form just a group of friends, isn't it? A group of friends that have an interest in a project. You're at uni together, you've got a project in that way, and you just get to know each other, and then you come out of uni and suddenly you think, oh, let's start a company about this. Let's have a go at actually producing some professional stuff. Or even like clubs, I suppose, you can go along and you can find societies or clubs or meetups on meetup.com or similar types of things where people are interested in this.
What are some of the websites you've used in the past for finding freelancers?
Yeah, so the best ones that I've used in the past, the one that I use most often is Upwork. So that started out as Odesk, now it's Upwork. And they've got a great range of people. They've got great tools for checking references, checking the amount of hours people have done. I mean, the biggest trouble with these is that you can find somebody, you can spend a few days training them up or passing on the stuff, and then they just disappear. It's happened to me loads of times. But I've got a lot better these days at looking at the right stats. So like, for example, I only ever take somebody on an Upwork that's done more than, I think I filter for 1,000+ hours. Mm-hmm. So they're obviously invested in that platform. This is the work they do. It's not just a part-time gig or something like that. This is what they do. So they're more likely to take it seriously when they work with you. Then you've got the star ratings. So filter it for like 4 or 4.5 up out of 5. So mm-hmm. you're making sure that these people get good ratings. More than that, look at the actual written ratings as well. So anyway, Upwork has got some really good tools for that, for actually filtering people and finding good folk. I had I think I mentioned Freelancer when we were chatting about this before, didn't I? But I think freelancer.com has been subsumed into somewhere else. Could be wrong in that, actually. Check out freelancer.com anyway, and it'll probably redirect you to wherever they've ended up. But certainly Upwork is the main one of them I use. And then there's Fiverr, I suppose, isn't there?
Yeah, Fiverr.
Which never costs a fiver.
Yeah. And it's, I've got a thing about Fiverr. I see it as like this race to the bottom. They did an advert a while back. I don't know if you remember it, and it was glorifying the fact that, you know, when you're on there marketing your services, and it was basically, it was a photo of a lady, and it was like, you don't sleep, you don't eat, you drink coffee, you work 25 hours a day, you're a go-getter. And I was like, what kind of message is that? Like, work yourself into the grave for pennies, and this is brilliant. This is
that is an example to set for our youth.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't go to Fiverr.
Race to the bottom.
But do you know what? The one thing Fiverr is good for is the small, simple, quick jobs. Like, create me a little sting for my show. I want a little 30-second sting put together for this one purpose. And I just want one person to take care of that, because I just don't have time to do it just now. So for really specific, little, well-defined jobs that would only cost you sort of in the low region anyway, Fiverr can be good for that, I think.
I think is what some of the dangers I've heard of Fiverr is, you just don't want to spend time slagging Fiverr off. But in some ways I do. It's like, there's people on there selling stuff that isn't theirs, basically. Mm-hmm. I've heard the podcast cover art being ripped off and sold on there. So you've got to be careful of what you buy on there, whether it's audio or whatever.
When you're paying $20 for something,
And then, like, you might save money in what you pay, but then you're paranoia and going to research and try and find out if this exists anywhere else. So you've got to weigh it up. It might be worth the risk. It might not be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Depends on you.
Cool. I mean, there's the obvious places to advertise to try and find some relevant people as well, like Gumtree. So stick an advert on Gumtree, looking for somebody with the relevant skills.
Craigslist.
So Gumtree, Craigslist, Facebook. Facebook's got loads of relevant online communities. So like audio producers community, or the researchers community, the presenters community, whatever it is, you can put a wee ad up in there. And even locally, you shouldn't forget, like, local adverts too. Like, go to a university or a college, put an advert up there, find some really good people for pretty low cost, really enthusiastic students, and even the local papers as well. I mean, it's the kind of thing, it's an exciting, fun job to do. So, you know, you can get away with finding hobbyists that are into this stuff, mm-hmm. that are really interested in it, that can be really good, that are willing to work for not very much, because it's something they find fun anyway. Something they would do. Like, it's like when we talk about people getting paid to podcast, people are often willing to get paid anything to podcast because they'd be doing it for free anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a few different places there. Talking about pay, there's a few different ways to pay people, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, the obvious one being money.
Yes.
And if you have it, then brilliant. The world's your oyster.
Yeah.
But not many people do. So you maybe have to explore other avenues.
Yeah.
Like dishing out shares in the ownership of the project, mm-hmm. And allowing creative input, which I'd like to think you would give anyway to your team members. Nah. But basically getting something down in writing, getting an agreement between everyone that we all have a percentage of this, and mm-hmm. however well it does, we own this percentage of the project and any future income.
Yeah, and I think you can do that in a few ways. So, a couple of ways in particular. There's like, if you're a group of friends, you're all going in together to do this, then you all have an equal share, obviously. Like, if we did a podcast together, we came up with the idea together, 50-50, it would be, we'd shared ownership that way. If it is your project, though, like, you've put together a plan, you've put together a creative idea, you've even started planning out the episodes, all that kind of stuff, then it is possible to take people on with, like, a lower share. So, like, so I'm going to give 10% to my audio producer. If I can find somebody that's willing to come in and put the effort in for that amount. It can be harder, obviously, because it's quite a low percentage and it's not guaranteed or anything like that. But it's definitely something we've done, shared out income on projects that we've worked on in the past. So it's possible. It's possible.
You can also, this isn't necessarily easy to do, especially if you're very new to this, but going out there and getting a sponsor or an investor, basically.
Yeah, up front.
And someone who's just going to pay for the series up front. But if you don't already have a portfolio, that's not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you need to have someone to show them, really, don't you? Bit of a guarantee of the quality, at least. All righty. Is there a couple of things we could say at the end just to tie things up around just some tips around managing it, really?
Yeah, SOPs. Standard operating procedures. Never knew what that meant until a few years ago. Just to see it on various
until you saw, there's a lot in that. In,
Colin, what's a SOP?
Yeah, it's there's a bit in that in e-myth that you mentioned already. That's a big part of that. It's putting together those standard operating procedures. Every time you do something more than once. So everything you do in producing a podcast, if you do it more than once, then create a standard operating procedure, which is basically a checklist. It's just do this, 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 and then this, and put in loads of detail. So like if you normalize your show every single time, put how you do it, like literally the steps, here's what I normalize it to, the decibels, that kind of stuff. And then that means that it's really easy to outsource because you just hand them that list. Do this. Yeah. Here's the instructions.
Aye, it's not left to... guesswork.
Yes, exactly. Or their own judgment, which as good as people are, often you want to direct them anyway, because if you're working with a team of people, then those inconsistencies start to creep in with lower quality. So, yeah. Aye. There's even, I mean, so you've got those, then there's just like the communication side of things, isn't there? Like actually talking to each other, updating on where everybody is in the project, using tools like we use Slack and Trello a lot for these.
Yeah.
Trello's kind of our task list, isn't it? That's where we put our tasks. And Slack is where we have our general conversations so that we've got a record of things that were decided.
Yeah. And things like deadlines and sprints as well. So like you're big deadlines and then you're shorter, like what are we doing this week? By the end of the week, what do we want done?
Yes.
Just making sure you're all moving forward, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Aye. Yeah, I mean, it comes down to really making a plan and sticking to it, doesn't it? It's like, you know, you're saying, here's our deadline at the end of the day. Here's a 3-month deadline to get the first episode out. Here's the shorter deadlines. So when we want the material gathered by, when we want the research gathered by, that kind of thing. And actually having that in one place. So Trello for us, that's where we put it. And then talking about it in one place, Slack, so that if somebody on the team's not involved in that conversation, they can still look back and see the results of it. I think that's what makes these things run smoothly. It's making sure it's all quite standardized. Makes it sound boring. Takes the creative. This is what people always moan about. It's like, this is a creative process. I don't want to tie it down to standard operating procedures and processes. Like, well, okay, but you're going to end up with a pile of crap. So,
yeah, just with things like this, everything depends on everything else.
Yeah,
so
totally.
If one thing falls behind, it just like jams everything.
Yeah,
so
totally.
That's why as much as, you know, creative people, artistic people, you want to just do your thing, but you kind of need this stuff.
Yeah. There's that, what's the saying? There's something in, with discipline comes creativity, because, or with discipline comes freedom, because like if you have a process for everything, if you have a system for everything, if you do the same thing every time, it frees up your brain to be more creative with the stuff you can be creative with, which is the narrative, the content, the overall vision of the project.
Because otherwise you're worrying about like, oh, I've not done this or this needs done.
Yeah,
like that should be taken care of itself to an extent.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. Okay. I hope that was useful. I hope that was, that actually went a fair bit longer than we thought it would, but there's a lot in there, isn't there? There's a lot of roles in this process. And even if you do it yourself, I think it's worthwhile, like we said, it's worthwhile thinking about them all individually so that you know exactly what you've got to do. You can plan it out well, especially if it's your first project of this type.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So next time, we kind of started on the tools there, didn't we? We mentioned Slack and Trello, but I think the next episode on this is going to be a full kind of tools and resources episode. So all of the different bits of software, the different tools, different things, the different, bits and pieces that make up this process. We're going to talk about that. It's always fun talking about the gadgets and things like that. So that should be good. That'll tie up the series. I think it's nearly Christmas, isn't it? Not to date the episode, but we're going to have a wee interlude Christmas episode next week, I believe. Anyway, that's what we're going to do. So the following episode will be the final one of this season, which will be the tools and resources one. But thank you again for joining us in this one. Thank you for co-hosting as always, Matthew.
Yeah, thank you.
This was mostly your planning as well, so good work on the detail that made us go nearly an hour of content.
need a better researcher.
Yes, indeed. Just finish up by saying, again, this is sponsored by The Podcast Host Academy, thepodcasthost.com/academy. And if you want more help in figuring out whether highly produced podcasting is for you, or in figuring out the process, the equipment, the anything about it, or you're just starting out and you want to just know how to basically podcast, monetization to promotion to just launching the blooming thing, then get in touch. thepodcasthost.com/academy. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Thanks for spending time with us again, and we'll talk to you then.